Well, hello everybody, and welcome. This is Turning Towards Life, and we are Lizzie and Justin, and we are from Third Space, and we are here again for another week, early on in the sixth year of this conversation, where we gather for half an hour once a week and begin with a source that opens up into who knows what kind of conversation. So I'm very, very glad to be here, Lizzie, and want to say thank you to you for showing up right in the midst of everything of life, and to say welcome to everyone who's with us. You're so, so welcome to be with us too.
Thank you, Justin. So we're on a Sunday the 30th of October in 2022. And Justin, this is another kind of level of the kind of no matter what of being here, because, as you know, my father-in-law died last night in the late afternoon, and so I've had a really tear-filled crying night with my husband, my lovely husband Matthew, and his family, and my family all rallying around to help us, and this is a space and a thing that I want to be in really no matter what. And so I come here with my very tenderized, sad heart, but can already feel all of the blessings of Peter's life and all of that. And it's such a sweet thing that we're going to be reading a poem of my niece Beau's today. And she's so tuned into life and people, and she's been so lovely with everything to do with Peter and Matthew, and as is my sister and my mum and everybody around us, my brother and my dad, and obviously Matthew's family. So I feel like the fact that we've got a family source this week is really beautiful. And I want to thank Beau for being a poet and for being someone who sees the world the way that she does, and who inspires me and leads me into questions and inquiries. And, you know, I read this poem and I was like, I don't even know what this is in one way, which is partly the reason to bring it here, is for me to spend more time with it and for you to spend some time with that, and for us to see what this is and for everyone to spend time with it. But one of the things that is the gift of Beau is that she sees in this very beautiful way that opens my thinking and my heart and my mind into new realms. And so I feel very kind of led and opened by this, which is why I wanted to bring it to us, to this space, to see what unfolded between us because of it. So here we go. It's called Ordinary by Beau Holden, who is 15 and about to be 16, I think, in February. Well, I know in February, the end of February. So here we go. Ordinary by Beau Holden. Her sturdy branches were the towering mountains to dance on. Her deep roots, the rolling rivers to frolic in. Every inch of her was infused with the wonder of the world. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. Her trunk was my place of comfort, just the place to eat my oat cakes. In autumn, her fallen leaves were warm blankets for the fairies. In spring, her golden buds were the perfect shape of a fish for my fire. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. I would look up through her web of leaves at the cold sky. I would sit resting against her trunk, feeling her rootedness into the underground world. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. One of my last afternoons with her, she slipped something into my pocket. When I asked what it was, she answered, "You will know one day when you are aware and awake." I didn't understand those words, so I sat, I forgot, I trusted. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. As I grew older and started to wake, I forgot what it felt like to feel so content, alone with her. I forgot what it felt like to dance on her mountains or frolic in her rivers. My focus started to shift. My life felt full and heavy. My mind was only ever thinking ahead of what was. My body felt full of weighted dread. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. One day, long after I had stopped my visits to the tree, I reached into my pocket to find what she had given me all that time ago. Now, some may have only seen an oatcake, but I saw so much more. I saw the dreams I used to have. I saw the blissful joy. 10 years later, I am 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. I saw her mountains, smelt the rivers. I saw the fairies passing by. An explosion of life filled my heart as tears filled my eyes. I looked at the oatcake resting softly in my hand. I wondered to myself, however I lost this joy. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. I want to keep it forever and ever and never let it go. Maybe if I gripped it tight enough, it would surrender and stay with me. In that moment, I heard her voice, faint, carrying the warmth of a soft summer breeze. It's always in your reach, my love. It will always be there waiting, but letting go is part of life. Let this be your awakening. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day.
My goodness, I feel so grateful to Beau, to you, Beau, for writing this for us and making it available for us. And I'm going to read from the start. And just say to everyone, if you're listening, watching, and you don't know where to find this, with Beau's permission, we will publish the words always on our Facebook group. They're there already, and in the notes with the podcasts, and on our lovely turningtowards.life website, and with the YouTube video. It's called Ordinary. Her sturdy branches were the towering mountains to dance on, her deep roots the rolling rivers to frolic in. Every inch of her was infused with the wonder of the world. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. Her trunk was a place of comfort, just the place to eat my oatcakes. In autumn, her fallen leaves were warm blankets for the fairies. In spring, her gold buds were the perfect shape of a fish for my fire. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. I would look up through her web of leaves at the cold sky. I would sit resting against her trunk, feeling her rootedness into the underground world. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. On one of my last afternoons with her, she slipped something into my pocket. When I asked what it was, she answered, "You will know one day when you are aware and awake." I didn't understand those words, so I sat, I forgot, I trusted. 10 years later, I am 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. As I grew older and started to wake, I forgot what it felt like to feel so content alone with her. I forgot what it felt like to dance on her mountains or frolic in her rivers. My focus started to shift. My life felt full and heavy. My mind was only ever thinking ahead of what was. My body felt full of weighted dread. 10 years later, I am 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. One day, long after I had stopped my visits to the tree, I reached into my pocket to find what she had given me all that time ago. Now, some may only have seen an oatcake, but I saw so much more. I saw the dreams I used to have. I saw the blissful joy. 10 years later, I am 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. I saw her mountains, smelt the rivers. I saw the fairies passing by. An explosion of life filled my heart as tears filled my eyes. As I looked at the oatcake resting softly in my hand, I wondered to myself how I ever lost this joy. 10 years later, I am 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day. I wanted to keep it forever and ever and never let it go. Maybe if I gripped it tight enough, it would surrender and stay with me. In that moment, I heard her voice faint, carrying the warmth of a soft summer breeze. It is always in your reach, my love. It will always be there waiting, but letting go is part of life. Let this be your awakening. 10 years later, I'm 10 years older. I walk past the ordinary tree on an ordinary day.
Mm. Thank you, Justin. Such a beautiful thing to be read to like that with this poem. And as you read, it was like I was being wafted on a journey. It was really beautiful. I think that the thing that's so moving to me is that I think how it exists in me as you've read this to me and as I read it myself, is that both talking about falling asleep and waking up to magic and wonder, and how it's so easy for us to think it's an ordinary tree on an ordinary day. And of course it is, in that part of us that's grown up, in that part of us that's getting on with things, in that part of us that's trying to do our best to live or something. And what this is bringing me to is, you know, I'm sitting here now, there's a tree outside this window that I completely take for granted. And this is inviting me back into the magic of being a human being, living in a natural world, being able to be in relationship with life, with all of this language, like fish around the fire and the shape of things and the roots and the ground and the tree speaking and the joy of the branches and the shelter and all of the things a tree could be to me, to any human. And so I'm grateful for this reminder and grateful for this, the way that Beau articulates the dance between being awake and being asleep, and coming into awareness, either into the awareness of our grown-upness or into the awareness of our littleness, our youth, our childness. And that it's this, life seems to be a dance between those things. But how crucial it feels to me to be reminded of all of our sense of magic and all of our sense of wonder and all of our sense of the way that things come alive in the very particular ways that they come alive differently to each of us. And that's what feels like it brings me alive in this poem, is a reminder of that. Like, I'm going to walk down the street more intrigued and wondering about the magic of things today because of the poem.
It's a great gift to read Beau's words and to, like you said, Lizzie, to have them read. And it's a reminder for me of, in a way, I think it's implied in everything Beau is writing about, what can come to each of us if we'll just let somebody else read to us and let ourselves unfold, soften and unfold into the magic of whatever it is that's being read to us in the presence of another. So that's it, the everything that's encapsulated, that's expressed in this beautiful poem is also here in the act of reading and listening to another. Yeah. Right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these words in the way that all poetry can do, help us to see something and do something that's very often hard to see, which in a way is, Beau lands on right at the end about the way in which we try to grip tight to the world and how our gripping tight, necessary in some ways as it must be, which I'll say a bit more about in a moment, also estranges us from the world and from what things are and how things are. And it was striking me as I was reading and as you were reading that maybe it's absolutely necessary. If we're lucky, we find ourselves when we're very young in a state of wonder and amazement at the existence of anything. And that we can really feel at that stage how beautiful and mysterious and vast a tree is. If we're lucky enough to have grown up in a place that was safe enough to do that and where we were supported enough to do that. And then maybe inevitably as we grow, and it's amazing to think of Beau writing this at 15 and imagining a future of many decades, what that might be and what she's been able to see in this, which I so appreciate is really touching me very deeply, almost four decades further on into my life. Maybe it's inevitable that we start to hold tight and to lose a certain amount of touch with how enchanted existence is, mm-hmm. how radically amazing it is that there is anything at all and that things live and that we live and that there are trees. And because we start to encounter not only the practicalities of life, but more and more of a sense of we have to be the ones who take care of our own safety and the safety of others and our own sustenance and all of that. And it brings us into encounter with the grasping that we have to do, that we humans are able to do. You know, we can see things and move things and make things and reach for things and wish for things and have things happen. So that's, I don't read Beau's words as if somehow it would be better if we spent our entire lives in the small childhood state of wonder. There's a sort of course, we're going to be brought into interaction with the world of taking care of things and having things happen. But there is a way that it's very, very easy for that to become the center of our lives. When in mm-hmm. fact, I think this is Beau is articulating this with such beauty and depth. The right way around, it seems for me, is for that to be in service of our being in wonder and amazement and appreciation of the world. That when it gets the wrong way around, when our grasping and gripping becomes for its own sake, that's when we're most likely to lose contact with just the sheer basic extraordinariness that there's anything at all.
Yeah.
And it's hard for us because I think many of us have been taught in many ways that the gripping and the grasping is what's most true. And that the wonder is at best a distraction, and at worst, maybe even a kind of falseness. Like if you were real about the world, if you were to get real, you would see that all there is things to be fearful of, things to grasp. And there are those things. But it seems to me both a tragedy and also we need poets like Beau to remind us what the source of everything is.
Yeah. As you're talking, Justin, as well, I'm feeling into the... It feels really important to me right now in the world that, like, the ages are woven together, the ages of the humans. And I feel like I'm learning so much from this poem, from Beau, and from us talking about it. And it's also my wish that in us being here together, we weave ourselves into her world in some way too. Like, I feel like that's what we need, is to learn from one another all the time. And so I'm really glad to be here and to be holding this. And, you know, as you were, the thing I was just learning then, Justin, from what you were saying was, like, I haven't really ever explicitly connected, like, this gripping on thing in its relationship to wonder. And I just feel like it's really clarified for me that I needn't do them, those things. I mean, of course I'm going to grip on and I'm going to be afraid and all of those things, but I could also let wonder sit right next to it and or respond to that tension with a practice of wonder, with a kind of seeking out wonder to see what I could do to create that relationship that you were talking about, of maybe all of our organizing and doing could be in service of wonder. Like they could have a relationship with each other rather than my life either being wondrous or organized, you know, or, you know, trying to fix everything down or being frolicking in the bushes or something. And I feel like I'm saying frolicking in the bushes as well, because this week Vesper and I went to Kew Gardens and we literally rolled around in the leaves on the floor in the autumn leaves, and it was completely delightful. We had such a nice time. And so it feels very present as well, that that magic is right in my world with her, and, you know, being with a three-year-old for an extended period of a day, this kind of realm is open. If I choose to spend time in it with her, I could be like, oh, that's a child getting on with her thing, I'm going to do what I'm doing. But very often it's my choice to get into the leaves with her and have her bury me or something in them rather than watch her play and do something at the same time. So I feel it just feels really, really beautiful that we have this opportunity to be in this kind of like a Mobius strip of relationship with one another, that we can be open to one another and learn from one another and let others lead us into the realms of things that we haven't yet explored. And I think this is really a poem of awakening, of both awakening into the more serious realms of life, but then when we're in the serious realms of life, awakening into the magic of life. And both directions are awakenings. And that, I think that's what's so moving to me about it, is that it's whichever way you look, wherever you are, awakening in different directions is possible. And I want to also thank Bo for just, you know, the skill and the way that she's written this as well. Of, you know, as I read it, it's like the world is evoked so clearly for me because of her language and the kind of the rhythm of the 10 years later, 10 years older, ordinary tree, ordinary day is right there. And it's like punctuates everything. So the kind of ground of reality of what's actually happening now is right next to the wonder and the magic. And it threads itself all the way through. And also today, in this time where, you know, I feel myself as a person is also this letting go being an awakening. Like if we can let go, really let go, we can trust that it's a process of awakening rather than one where we feel like maybe all is lost or there's no hope or something. We could also move into a space of, ah, if there's letting go happening, maybe there's a chance for awakening here at the same time.
I'm just feeling into this part. As always, there's so many things to say, Lizzie, in response to everything you've just said and everything that's here in Bo's wonderful writing. That, like you said, Bo's done this amazing thing of evoking a whole world of possibility here in the way that she's written this. I'm just feeling into letting go. And this thought that, and it's so clearly expressed in Bo's words, that even our longing for the openness we once felt when we were small can be a way of the way that we're holding on very tight, that strangles the life out of the very thing that we long for.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sense that we have as we grow, that we're on our own, I'm on my own, it's all down to me. If I don't hold on very tight and make the world the way that it's meant to be, then I'm lost.
Mm-hmm.
And really what Bo invites us into here at the end is the possibility that it's also true that letting go of what we're holding on very tightly to is what brings us back into contact with our lives that we somehow we've gone far away from.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this. I'm lucky enough to have grown up without a traumatic childhood. And so there are many experiences of wonder and joy in my early childhood that are not difficult for me to remember. And I've been thinking as I've been reading those words and listening to you, wondering about, what are all the ways of knowing myself and knowing life that I've come to hold on to very tightly because they felt like somehow they would make me safe?
Mm.
Like, and what are the ways in which I hold on to unhappiness when it's not called for?
Mm.
What are the ways in which I hold on to fear when it's not called for? Or what are the ways in which I hold on to seriousness when it's not called for? And since reading Bo's poem for the first time just a couple of days ago, I've been feeling into over the last couple of days, you know, I do have choices about letting go of things on the inside that I'm holding on to.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, many of them are not given. Some of them are not easy to hold up and let go of. And some of them, I'm not sure I really started. Some of them, I think, came from bigger systems that we're in. But there are also ones that I can see that I hold onto, stories, ways of grasping, ways of trying to stay safe. And I've been practicing taking the advice of this voice that Bo writes about at the end and wondering to myself, could I just declare
mm-hmm.
a letting go of that? Instead of treating whatever it is as if it was a solid fact of my life, what happens if I let go of being afraid?
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that I have, it's not straightforward, but it's also not so hard all the time. There are moments mm-hmm. There are definitely moments where I can go, oh, that is simply something I have found myself holding on to, and holding on is only one way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reminder to me that Bo's words also really help with, because of the way that she's written about the flow of life over many decades, that we are not fixed and we are way more complex and rich and varied inside than we imagine.
Mm.
And there's very, very often a degree of choice around gripping and surrender, holding and letting go. Trying to be in control and knowing ourselves as part of a vast world that was here before we were born and we didn't make and we're not in charge of.
Yeah.
You know, that there are, even in a world where many people and many of us have many constrained choices for all kinds of reasons, there is also this degree of freedom
mm-hmm.
that's very often available to us, and it's so important to have others remind us of it. Not in an unkind way. This is a deeply kind poem to remind us that there is something always in our reach and waiting, that letting go of what we've held on to is what allows it to be present.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Gosh, I feel very like moved around by, you said, you know, holding on to something internally is only one way of handling it, one way of being in relationship with it. So then I'm thinking, well, okay, so if I'm holding on to a worry of mine, there are all kinds of ways to be with that worry. Hanging on to it is a way. I could hang on to it and interact with it 100 times a day and examine it and pull it apart, and you know, in the hanging on, that's one kind of possibility, and 100 possibilities. If I hold on to it, there are a particular set of possibilities that come with that. And then if I, like you said, if I go, if that's one way, then implied in that is that there are other ways. So what else could I do with this worry? Maybe I could put it down. Maybe I could let it go. Maybe I could play a game with it. You know, I could start thinking of all kinds of different things that would then open up a whole other different set of possibilities to do with that something. And you said the word freedom. I was thinking, yeah, so we have some freedom to observe and then wonder and make some of our own decisions about what we want, how we want to handle things, rather than just go with the thing that seems most normal and present and habitual that we would ordinarily do. So I feel like this conversation is kind of opening that up for me on an internal level too, of like, oh, I have some agency, like I can hold these things here in front of my eyes, and I can say, ah, oh, this is a worry, or this is a something I'm hanging on to really tightly. How can I shift my relationship to that, that I might feel a different set of possibilities, which may or may not be more helpful, but just the fact that I can do that seems to create more freedom and more choice. And then it feels easier to be human, like I've got things rather than they've got me. So I'm not going to be pulled around by these things, but that I can be in conversation with them. I can give them respect. I can listen. I can, instead of them having a hold of me, I can hold them in front of me and work with them kindly, respectfully. It's really beautiful. And I think, Justin, that's probably around the time that we've agreed to be in this conversation together. So I want to just take a moment to thank Bo very sincerely for being a person who writes these kinds of things and who would allow us to bring it here into Turning Towards Life. And Justin, I want to thank you for being a person with whom things open. You know, you always open me into new territories, as this poem has also done. So the combination of those things is really wonderful to me. So thank you. And I want to thank everyone for being here. I want to thank everyone for very generous, you know, all through these last weeks when I've been mentioning Peter, my father-in-law, and his being unwell. Everybody's been very kind to me, and I feel very supported by and held by our community as well, Justin. So I want to say thank you for that. And also thank you, Justin, for you being in this moment with me, and for this being what is the thing to do, is to be in conversation about meaningful things and feeling life as it is and not turning away, and being here with our hearts tender and open and broken, and to still be in relationship and tenderness with one another. So thank you.
It's a great joy and a great privilege. So we must be done then.
I think we're done.
We'll be back, all being well, we'll be back this time next week. Thank you, Lizzie, for all you bring, and thank you everyone for being with us. Bye-bye.